Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 11 of the Retro Odyssey podcast. We're right at the end of the year now in December, and we have a Christmassy episode for you. As normal, I'm joined by Ryan, Matt, and Steve. Hello, guys. How are you doing?
Hello.
Hello.
We have some Christmas games available for you, and we're going to jump straight in, I think, with Matt's pick, which is a very Christmassy game. So we'll see you after the jump, and we're just going to go straight into our first pick.
Ho, ho, ho.
My game this month is The Official Father Christmas, which is also called in other places The Official Father Christmas Game, and the box art just says Official Father Christmas, which is a bit of an odd name. But it was released for the ZX Spectrum, C64, and Amstrad CPC. It is a game where you have to first construct Santa's sleigh by picking up all the pieces around Santa's workshop, and then you choose some presents that you want to deliver to the kids, and you get kind of a weird segment where they all drop from the ceiling and you've got to collect all the presents. It's a little bit of a pointless section. And then you have a section where you actually deliver the presents and you've got to line them up with chimneys, and there's all sorts of obstacles in the way that can make your presents fly away. So the game was actually a charity game for Save the Children. It was released in 1989 for those three systems. I'm not sure of the price of the C64 and Amstrad CPC versions, but the Spectrum one retailed at $2.99, which makes it a budget game. There were quite a lot of budget games released to the Spectrum, and this is one of them. I would have said maybe $2.99, maybe a little bit overpriced, but it was a charity game, which kind of makes up for that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's the best game, but what did you guys think of it?
Well, I would say that it's probably worth that price just for the box art alone. Did you guys actually see the box art of the game?
I'm looking at it now.
Yeah, you've got some dude dressed up as Father Christmas bending over a Christmas tree. I mean, that might not be the most apt way of describing it, but yeah, it's interesting, but it's pretty neat. And as I say, I think it's quite a nice-looking cover for a Spectrum game.
Yeah, I believe all three versions had the same cover.
Yeah. But yeah, you mentioned about the game having different sections. So really, there are like three clear sections. There's the bits where you're getting organized, the present collecting, and then the delivery. And honestly, I didn't really find any of them to be fun. I didn't find any of them to be particularly bad. I just found them to be kind of there.
Yeah, it does seem to be kind of a budget game made quickly just to try and like get it out there, really.
The second and third part seem more like mini games rather than the actual game. Like the part where you're actually hunting the bits and pieces in Santa's house, that actually seems to be the main part of the game. And then the other bits are just like extra tacked on things, which are like bonuses for doing it.
Yeah, the second section is a bit pointless because you just pick six presents at random. It doesn't matter which. And then they all fall from the sky and you can just touch any of the presents. And
that'll do.
Once you've actually touched those six presents, then it moves on, but you don't get any penalties for touching the wrong presents or anything like that.
I think you probably just get like score bonuses for getting the right ones.
I wasn't sure. I wasn't really looking at the score at that particular point, to be honest.
Yeah, I wasn't really paying attention, but I would imagine that collecting the correct presents would net you a bonus. So I think it's more for like high scores rather than anything.
Yeah, maybe.
Because after all, if Timmy wants a bicycle for Christmas and you get him a box of chocolates, you know, you're still delivering presents, you might just not be very happy that year.
Yeah, it can take what it gets.
Exactly.
Poor guy.
Yeah, poor little Timmy.
But as you said, the first section is really the only bit that
seems like a game.
Yeah.
And that was the part that I found the most infuriating, to be honest. Because I didn't really understand what I was doing. I just did it. Because for me, it seemed like all the bits were just appearing at random. So I was going up and down around the screens, and it was like, oh, there's a thing. And I just kept on going until I'd done it.
So basically what happens is there are certain parts of Santa's workshop that will spawn a piece of the sleigh, and you have to collect that part. You've just got to keep going around until you find one of the parts. I mean, it's not a massive area to go around in, but the difficulty comes from the elves that are running around. If you hit one of the elves, then they will steal the part of the sleigh from you and then hide it somewhere else. Because the elves are basically dicks to Santa. There's no reason why they would need to be doing this. They're clearly disgruntled. Santa needs to kind of like crack the whip, I think. They've probably got a strong union and they can't do anything about it. But the fact that this is the official Father Christmas game, this is the one that he's endorsed. It sounds like a cry for help for me.
Yeah.
Because he's like saying, this is what I have to deal with.
But if you look at it from their perspective, he kind of forces them to make toys, like, all year. He probably doesn't pay them anything, like, substantial, because they can never leave his workshop. So I imagine that that's the very least that they could do, is to, you know, piss him off occasionally.
A little bit of holiday sabotage. I did fun. Well, what made the elves really rough to deal with, too, was not necessarily them being in the room, but when they would just appear off screen, they would just suddenly be there.
Yeah.
There were a couple sections where you had to like camp the ladder and wait for them so you could progress into the next screen, and it was really, really irritating.
Yeah.
Well, whilst the Spectrum and CPC versions are essentially identical, apart from ever so slightly better color delineation on the Amstrad CPC, because the Spectrum does have a lot of color bleed, the C64 version is like a different port, and that first section is actually made a lot more tough by the elves having a more varied movement range, and they can follow you up ladders and they can follow you through screens as well. So
oh hell no,
it is even worse to try and like get your sleigh put together.
But on the flip side, because I did play both, because I forgot which one we were covering at first, so I just snagged a ROM for both. I found the Commodore 64 to be much more pleasing to look at, first of all. Graphically, it's quite nice. But I almost found the elves, they were more challenging and less frustrating, I guess. I mean, they're still assholes, but
not as irritating. You know.
What you'll often find with graphics, though, in C64 and the Spectrum, the C64 is generally going to be more colorful. It's going to be a lot more vibrant because it generally has better use of color than the Spectrum does, but the Spectrum graphics tend to look better. I mean, with this game, the sprites for me look better on the Spectrum and the CPC version than they do on the C64, but you have full color on C64, so it's kind of a trade-off there.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd say that it kind of looks a bit more pleasing because you've got more neutral colours rather than the sharp, bright colours of the Spectrum. But I would probably agree that the actual sprites themselves just look better in the Spectrum version.
Yeah, and the CPC version is identical to it. If you're going to play one of the three, I would say go for the CPC version because it is slightly sharper graphics, slightly better use of colour in that version.
If you had to. If you were forced to play this game.
If you had to, yeah. I mean, this is one of those games where if I had have paid $2.99 for it, I probably would have been disappointed. It feels like a $1.99 game. And back then, that pound kind of made all the difference. I mean, I know it doesn't sound like much now in the days of £60 games and DLC and season passes and all that. But there was a difference between a $1.99 budget game and a $2.99 budget game. I think the reason this one was $2.99 was purely because it was a charity game.
I think that if you got it for $2.99, probably you wouldn't have been as bothered because you would have known it's a charity thing. I think you would have been more disappointed if you'd have got it for Christmas. if you saw it as a present and you're like, okay, this is a bit shit. Because, yeah, as you say, like, the second section is kind of pointless because you can't lose.
Mm.
And then the third part where you're delivering the presents is probably the most entertaining part, but it can be quite difficult because you have to deliver in certain places, but it can be quite difficult to find.
Well, and everything stops the presents.
Yeah.
Clouds stop the presents. Like, what happens if he goes to a town that's overcast? Santa's done for.
Yeah, he's just like, you're not getting presents this year.
Yeah, the clouds just steal the presents somehow. But the there are certain places that you've got to drop the presents. And for me, in my playthrough, you've got to drop 6 presents, but the 6th point where you drop the present just would not spawn for me at all. I just couldn't find anywhere. I was going backwards and forwards for literally 10 minutes until my time ran out. And I just couldn't find it at all. And if it gets to dawn and you haven't delivered all the presents, then you just get a screen coming up saying that...
You fucked up, Santa.
The elves have delivered the presents for you because, you know, they've got to give you a big fuck you at the end. And, like, better luck next time or something like that.
Yeah.
And I felt that was kind of unfair because I don't feel that that was my fault. I think there was something going on with the game that wasn't allowing that last point to spawn. But if you do manage to get through that, there are 4 different areas in the Spectrum and CPC versions. You get America, you get Asia, Europe, and you get Africa. And in the C64 version, I believe you get 6 because you've got Finland, which apparently they don't count as part of Europe.
No, they're their own sovereign continent, apparently.
Yeah, and I think there's another one. I think it's Australia.
No, it's the Antarctic. It's not the Antarctic, it's the Antarctic.
Yeah, because it's spelling wrong.
Mm-hmm. And then you have to like deliver to igloos.
One of the differences that we should like point out as well is that you kind of have a choice between the 2 different versions of the game. Spectrum and CPC, there is no music while you're playing the game, but there is sound effects. In the C64 version, there's music, but no sound effects. And I think
simpler times.
I think I would rather play the C64 version in that regard, because it is kind of boring when you're playing without music. It just
How many times can you hear the low fidelity loops?
Yeah.
Well, it's a really short game, so you're not listening to it for too long.
Yeah, maybe like 3 times and then it's done. But overall, I didn't think it was a bad game necessarily. I just thought it was kind of, it was okay. It, you know, it was made for charity and it serves a purpose, I suppose.
I'd like to point out one last thing in the difference between the C64 and ZX is the second, or the first mini game where you're catching the presents. Those presents are really, really fast on the Commodore.
Yeah, they are.
Like a fucking missile storm coming down, but of holiday cheer.
But you can't lose that section. You just keep going backwards and forwards collecting them until you've got the 6 that you need.
Yeah.
Thank God, too, because otherwise you would be done for.
Yeah, if you had to get specific presents, it'd be a bit of a pain in the ass.
It might actually be impossible, because they're really cruising.
Yeah.
On that version, yeah, I'd say you'd have a really tough time.
Steven, what do you reckon?
I pretty much agree with everything you guys said. I wasn't actually able to play this game, so I just had to find a playthrough. But yeah, I mean, for a cheap charity game, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, and I think that's what it boils down to be honest. You know, it was made for charity, and it's not really great. Maybe a bit overpriced, as Matt says, but I suppose that extra quid probably helped the kids back in the day.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it's just, it's a way to spend 15 minutes.
I mean, not a great way to spend 15 minutes, but
there are a lot of worse ways.
Yeah, which we'll cover later, I'm sure. Right, okay. Well, I think that sums up the official Father Christmas game. So let's take a quick break and we'll jump into my pick.
Hush,
My pick is Days Before Christmas. It was released on the Mega Drive and is actually an exclusive in Australia. It's a bit weird because it was developed by a company called Funcom, and they're actually Norwegian based. And I have no idea why this Norwegian company made an Australian exclusive Mega Drive game. It did end up getting released for the SNES as well, and that got released in Europe as well, but there was never any American version. And in this game, it's a platforming game, and you control Santa Claus. And he's basically saving Christmas from an evil snowman. And you go around, and you have to find presents. You have to save, like, reindeer and elves who are trapped in presents, I guess. I mean, you collect presents, and some of them have elves, so I suppose they're trapped in there. And there's a few bosses, you know, knocking around that you've got to beat. But it's pretty much just a bog-standard platformer more than anything. The game's pretty pricey too, as you probably expect, because it's quite rare. But we'll go into that a little bit later. So yeah, what did you guys think of it?
I have a very specific question to ask about this game. I was in the ice caves, and I found a power-up that gave Santa horns, and his attack was hitting things with his bag. So my question here is, did this game turn Santa into Krampus?
Well, sort of. He basically becomes the anti-Claus when he collects a magical power-up, which is a bit weird because it effectively turns him into the devil. He grows, like, bright red horns, and he basically just hits things with his sack.
Well, and here's the thing. You said the dev team was Norwegian, so that would actually line up because Krampus was a common thing in Northern Europe.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a point there. It could be based off the Krampus mythology, to be honest, by having his evil alter ego. But I believe that when you're the evil Santa, you can't collect any presents or anything. You can only just, like, swing your sack around.
Yeah, but you don't get hurt by enemies.
Yeah, you're invincible, so it's kind of a bit of a trade-off. But yeah, it's a really interesting mechanic, if a bit weird. It's certainly fun to have in a Christmas game, a cheery Christmas game.
The thing that I found weird is the fact that you drink a cup of tea to turn into a bad Santa.
I think it's coffee, but...
Is it? Oh, yeah, that would actually make a bit more sense.
I was pretty sure it was a hot toddy, but...
Yeah, turning into the devil after drinking a cup of tea, that's ridiculous. What is coffee?
If it had been an English-produced game, then it would be.
Yeah. Yeah, it's odd because you go around collecting, like, these presents anyway, but there's, like, weird things in there. Like, there's bombs in some of the presents. Like, some of them contain elves, some contain, like, power-ups, like this devil power-up. You've got bombs, you've got enemies, you know, you've got all kinds of stuff that you can pick up. The game is not particularly difficult either. It's quite a straightforward platformer, as I say, and it never really gets hard. One interesting thing as well is, not only do you have, like, the platforming levels and, you know, the obligatory bosses, but after you beat the boss, you actually go into a little minigame, which people who've played the official Father Christmas game might find a little bit familiar, because you go around dropping presents into people's chimneys.
Yeah, and that was quite a fun section as well, actually. It kind of turns into a shmup for a minute. Well, you can't really fire, but you do have to avoid oncoming enemies to get the presents into these chimneys.
Yeah, and they've all got different themes as well. So you do, like, a delivery one, and, like, I think there's one in Russia and one in London, I seem to remember. There's, like, different delivery sections in different countries, and they've all got, like, different themes. And it's quite neat. It's a nice little touch.
The game overall, I really enjoyed. It's simple, as you said. It's clearly more aimed towards kids, because there's nothing really there that's going to challenge you if you're, like, an experienced gamer. But it's just jolly, which is kind of appropriate for a Christmas game. And
apart from scarring kids for life after seeing the Santa Claus.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The devil. Yeah, aside from that.
Yeah.
I lost it when I just basically just beat the shit out of a penguin with my bag. That was the best thing.
Yeah.
Why is Santa killing penguins, by the way? Is there any particular reason?
And apparently turtle doves, too, in the ice caves. You're stomping on turtle doves.
Well, the bad guy is like an evil snowman, so I'm guessing like all the animals and stuff are against Santa for reasons. But it's weird because like the first boss, you've got the snowman, but like the second boss is like a clock for some reason. And then you've got a mouse, I think it is. I think it's a mouse or a rat. Then you've got the final boss, which is just something else. Did any of you get to the final boss?
I did the first two bosses.
What about you, Stephen? Did you see the final boss?
No, I did not.
Well, the final boss is basically Santa's greatest enemy. Can you think of what that might be?
The Easter Bunny?
It's not the Easter Bunny. It's a good guess, though.
It's not the New Year's baby, is it?
No. It's the weather, of course. When you're out delivering presents, your greatest enemy will be the weather. So you're fighting Mr. Weather as the final boss, which is like a big storm cloud.
Okay.
Which, in a way, is stupid. But it's also kind of genius, because I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's stupid and clever at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, you think at that point, the enemy would have been like Jack Frost or something like that, who was, you know, brewing up a storm.
Well, that's the thing, like, the evil snowman in the story is actually, like, the main villain, but he's the first boss. And then after that, it's like, stuff continues to happen. So it's like beating a game, but, you know, it's the first boss. And then the game just happens to continue after the boss is actually defeated.
Frosty's gone rogue.
Yeah.
But he was only a puppet!
It's a weird game, but for me, I think the actual game is kind of average. There's nothing really fantastic about it. Turning into evil Santa is nice, but it's not really much of a gimmick. It's very basic platforming, but I think the bosses kind of save it. I think the bosses kind of make it a little bit more interesting.
Well, I want to say, too, when you say it's basic platforming, but it's also good platforming, because you can have, like, oh, it's a standard platformer, jumping around, killing some enemies, but the game is surprisingly tight. And it's got that nice sprite going on, too. It's a very clean-looking game. The audio is surprisingly nice. I played this right after the official Father Christmas game, so this was like a huge upgrade.
Yeah, definitely.
It does introduce different kinds of platforming as well, because you got like those conveyor belts.
Yeah.
Right out the gate, you you basically, it's like, oh, here's the stairs, and then there's the giant candy cane stripper poles that you have to jump across.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're all kind of basic platforming gimmicks that have, you know, even at that point in the 16-bit era in 1994, was kind of done quite a lot by then in other games. So none of it was particularly new.
But even,
you know, as you say, you know, the game is solid and the controls are tight.
There you go. It's solid.
Yeah. I don't think it would ever win anyone's favorite Mega Drive game, but, you know, it's one of those games where if you play, you know, you'll have a decent time. I wouldn't want to play it more than one time a year. I think playing it at Christmas is, like, good enough.
Right.
One more thing I wanted to mention as well, which I found quite charming, is the fact that the levels, when you first go into levels, they are based on an advent calendar.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there are like 25 levels, and as you complete each level, it will take one of these numbers off the advent calendar.
Yeah.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, you're counting down the days till Christmas, apparently.
Yeah.
That's really clever.
It is, apart from after every quarter of the game, you go delivering presents, which doesn't really happen. I mean, Christmas is like one time of the year. It's not like four times throughout December.
Okay, I want you to deliver like, what was that, 90 days, quarter, 2.5 billion presents.
Yeah, let's go to
in
Germany
one night
on 7th of December. So yeah, anyway, how much do you think this game's worth? How much do you think it goes for?
I know it's outrageously expensive because it's rare, but like,
how much do you think it's worth, then?
How much I think the game is worth is, I would not shy away from paying somewhere between 15, I'd say around 15 bucks would be a fair price. Maybe 20 if it comes in a box.
I would have said about 10 pounds.
Yeah, I would probably say about a tenner is how much I'd be willing to pay for it.
That's about right.
Yeah, it goes for around, what, 350 on eBay?
How is this game so rare?
As I say, for the Mega Drive, it was released, like, exclusively in Australia, so they just made, like, no copies, apparently.
Oh, because the game was probably like $300 in Australia, and also rated mature for pigeon bludgeoning.
They probably made like 10 copies of it in total. The SNES version is cheaper. I think that goes for maybe, I can't remember how much it goes for, maybe about 200, because they released it in Europe as well, but it's still a pretty rare game, and it's quite pricey regardless of where you buy it. I'd say this is one of the games that you would be forgiven if you emulated it or got on an Everdrive or Repro or whatever. I think it would be acceptable. It's a decent game to play, but don't buy it.
We all emulated, so yeah. I don't think any of us was willing to spend that kind of money.
Yeah.
I thought it was all right. Like I said, about $10 is what I'd be willing to pay for it. You know, it's okay.
Cool. Well, I think that pretty much sums up everyone's opinion of the game. All in all, pretty solid, but nothing fantastic. So we'll take a little break and we'll move on to Ryan's pick.
The game I picked for our Christmas episode was Home Alone, as it is one of my favorite Christmas movies of all time. Now, this wasn't the shitty NES game, and it wasn't the shitty Super Nintendo game either. It was
a Mega Drive game.
I wouldn't say it was a shitty Mega Drive game, but it definitely was a Mega Drive game. It's a really interesting twist. You basically had to booby trap the house, and you got to cruise around on your sled somehow, your infinitely powered sled, and you would gather stuff, and you'd go to your house, and you would booby trap the house, get your BB gun or crossbow or other random gadgets that had nothing to do with the original movie. Then the wet bandits would show up and they'd try to rob your house. And basically you had to beat the shit out of them before they could leave with all of your stuff.
Yeah, and you got to wait like about 20 minutes or something for the police to arrive?
Yeah, you have a 20-minute countdown. And if you do the, I don't know if anybody tried it, but there's another mode where you have to defend the entire neighborhood.
Yeah.
And that gives you I think it's an hour or better.
The one that I played was just the standard version, and there were five houses, which I had 20 minutes on. That's the beginner difficulty level. If you go up to the expert difficulty level, then you have to fend them off for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what I'm saying here.
Yeah.
But there are five houses that you have to stop them from robbing.
But it's really interesting because some of the houses get really wacky. One of them's like a robot house. That's all I can think of what I'm about. It's like, it's all like super future. And instead of ladders, it has basically like glass elevator tubes. And there's a robot that roams around and electrocutes everybody.
Yeah, what was the robot about? I don't remember in the film.
I don't remember any of that in the first one. Like that was, Home Alone came out in like, what, 1990, 91 or something like that? I don't remember that part.
Well, one of the houses has a ghost.
It's definitely a wacky game, but it's not like necessarily hard either, because it's like if the one of the bandits gets the hands on you, he just hangs you up on a coat hanger on the wall, and it wastes some time. But like you have like glue you can put down, or I guess it's tar, or like toys they can trip on, and you can just kind of jump over them and let them trip over those a few times. You can shoot the shit out of them with whatever gun you might have. It is an experience.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like the idea. I mean, setting booby traps in the house to take care of the wet bandits seems like a decent idea, but I don't know. I don't think the game executes it very well. I found it a little bit confusing. I never really seemed to get very far in the game. I used to just kind of make up as I go along and just not do very well.
Well, it doesn't help that the, it straight just tells you what your controls are, but then the menu is not intuitive, like your pause menu.
No, it's not.
You look at that, you're kind of wondering what the hell's going on.
It doesn't explain well enough the core mechanics of the game.
No. And I think that's probably the main problem with the game. Like, this is probably, like, the third or fourth time I've tried playing the game. every time I seem to just be going in and thinking, I don't really get this.
And that's fair.
I mean, I know what I need to do. It's just the act of doing it is so convoluted.
Yeah.
And you've got to go through all these menus. You've got to craft weapons with stuff you find. And it's just too complicated for its own good.
Yeah.
And again, it's a cool idea.
Maybe it was too ambitious.
But yeah, it was executed poorly. And I wouldn't mind now if they took another shot at a Home Alone game, but, you know, it's 20 years later.
Well, they sort of did do another one. I mean, they made a Home Alone 2 game, but I'm not talking about that. They released one on the Mega CD.
Oh, did they?
Well, sort of. I don't know if you've ever heard of a game called Night Trap.
Yes.
But that's effectively like an adult version of Home Alone.
Well done.
An adult Kevin fighting off vampires.
Yeah, fighting off vampires. But yeah, I kind of feel like that game kind of took that key premise of setting traps and capturing intruders. And I feel like maybe a combination of the two would have worked quite well. Because I think that kind of looking out for the intruders and activating traps maybe would have been, you know, a little better and a little less complicated. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
I think it's also a thing of the tech not being able to handle the concept. Like you said, I think it's too ambitious.
Yeah. I mean, I think the game looks all right. Certainly inside the houses, I think graphically it looks nice.
Outside the houses is not that great.
No. Outside the houses are a bit kind of barren. And I think that aside from maybe the title music, I think from an audio perspective, it's pretty lacking as well. I didn't really like any of the music.
The level music is just horrible. But the title music is passable.
But the title music isn't even like the main theme from the films.
Well, no, because the films did, if I recall, the films didn't even really have a proper theme. They just had some Christmas music going on.
Did it not? I'm pretty sure it did, because didn't John Williams compose the music for it? It must have had like a main theme.
Yeah, there is a main theme.
Is there?
There is a main theme for Home Alone.
I mean, I can't remember what it is, but I'm pretty sure there probably was one. Back in the 90s, you know, all those films had a main theme. I'd have to YouTube it, but I'm sure it had one. But I'm sure it's not that music, because the title music in the game doesn't sound like a John Williams track.
I just quickly pulled it up on YouTube, now I recall. That was the part I completely forgot about. I don't know, it's like, oh yeah, duh, it's kind of an iconic theme, because I want to say it was in both Home Alone 1 and 2.
What is the theme? Can you hum it for us?
You just want me to, like, hold up my phone?
No, hum it.
Oh, shit.
I mean, that's Back to the Future.
That was a much better theme anyway.
Yeah.
Should have lost it. I just listened to about a second and a half, and I remembered that's like, oh yeah, it does have that.
Yeah, it can't be very memorable then. I imagine it's one of those ones where you listen to
it. No, because it's kind of like, it does have, and I was thinking Christmas, because it does have kind of a Christmassy tone. It uses like the light bells. It almost comes off as kind of a music box song.
I'll splice in about 5 seconds of it.
Yeah, I'm sure Matt will edit in some of the theme for us to listen to.
But not too much, lest we get smacked with a copyright infringement.
Well, yeah, definitely.
I mean, they'd have to be listening first.
Well, yeah. Exactly.
A little self-deprecating humor right there.
So, yeah, so what did people actually think of the game? I mean, people think it may be a little bit too ambitious. Did anyone like it? Personally, I didn't like it at all.
I didn't hate the game. Like I said, of the Home Alone games I've played, it's the best one. Unfortunately, that's a really low bar.
Yeah.
I really didn't like it, but I can see the potential in the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I wasn't a fan.
Okay, so well done, Ryan. You picked a cracker.
So next time I'll find if they made a TMNT Christmas game.
Oof. Please no. Please no. Right, well, I think it's time to move on to our final pick. So we'll take another break and we'll rejoin with Stephen's pick.
My pick for this one was Christmas Nights, the variant of Nights into Dreams for the Saturn. Full disclosure, I had not played this before picking it. It's just that Christmas games kind of aren't, you know, there's kind of not that many of them.
Well, that's true.
It's real simple. It's a quick two levels, basically, of Nights, but with a Christmas skin on them. There's a little bit of token story put on there. It's basically the same gameplay as Knights, which is fly around, collect the things before the time runs out.
Yeah, it's quite an arcade-style game. It's more about kind of accumulating good grades and a lot of points more than anything.
Yeah.
I didn't get to play the Christmas Knights because I didn't realize that it was actually part of the Knights into Dreams on XBLA. But I have played Knights many times before, and I touched it again, and then I went and watched, like, what does it look like with the Christmas level and kind of what's the story. So the gameplay is the same. It's just not the same visual. Like you said, it's just a skin, really.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, are you actually aware of what the situation was with Christmas Nights? It was basically just a promo that was released. So it's essentially a demo disc that was given away for free, I believe. So, you know, you could go into game shops and just pick up one of these Christmas Nights promos and just try out the game, really.
Yeah, my copy says on it, for promotional use only, not for resale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's kind of interesting because it's the first level from the game, essentially. But then it's got, like, all these extra bits and bats. Like, if you play in December, it becomes all wintry, and then if you play on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, you know, you've got all the extra Christmas stuff going on. But then there's also other occasions like April Fool's Day and Valentine's, mm-hmm. where things change slightly. And there's lots of unlockables and stuff you can get through every time you play. So it's quite in-depth for a demo.
And there was the Sonic mode. Well, I can't remember how you can pull Sonic out. But, and as far as I know, the Sonic mode, it's the same level again, but it's been themed a little bit different. You fly around as Sonic the Hedgehog.
No, you don't fly around as Sonic. You're literally on the ground. So, you know, like, if you run out of time and you turn back into the child and you have to walk across the bottom, it's basically that, but you're Sonic. You know, you can move quite fast, but, you know, the level's not really fit for purpose because you can't successfully do the level and get a good grade. You just run around the ground and just go around until you've beaten the level, basically. It's really weird and doesn't really work because, you know, going from a flying character to one that runs on the ground, of course it's not going to work.
Then maybe the clip that I saw was someone who had taken the game and taken the Sonic skin and put it over the standard Knights character.
Possibly, unless it was slightly tweaked. Maybe I'm just playing it wrong. But, like, I remember when I did it, it was just like, right, okay, let's run across the ground.
The clip I saw was Sonic flying around. When I found out, I was just like, oh, Sonic and Knights, and I found the thing, and it's Sonic flying around, not running at all.
I mean, they could be just jumping really well, but, yeah, as far as I'm aware, you just run across the ground.
It's essentially a 3D platformer version of the level.
Yeah. What's most interesting, though, is, like, the end of the level, when you beat the boss. Because the boss in the demo version is like, I don't remember his name. Do you remember the name of the boss in the game?
I do not.
It escapes me at the moment, but it's a big fish. But, like, if you beat a Sonic, you actually fight a different boss in the main game, which is this opera singer. But it's been reskinned as Robotnik. And it's probably one of the better fights in Knights. So, you know, fighting it with this Robotnik skin is actually kind of cool. What the hell is that boss called? Gillywing or something, maybe? That sounds about right. Gillywing or Gillwing or something. How many of you guys have actually played Knights before? Like, I know you have, Ryan, but Matt, you haven't, I assume. And have you played normal Knights, Stephen?
I have played it now. I had not played it before we started this.
How did you get on with that boss?
Oh, you're talking about the big flying dragon thing?
Yeah, the big flying dragon fish thing.
I didn't know what to do, so I just died.
Yep.
I did manage to work it out quite fast. I did die on my first attempt, but after that I did kind of work it out. Gilwing, the boss is called, by the way.
Ah, right. So I got it right, more or less.
I noticed kind of straight away that you could grab onto him and kind of like hurl him. But I noticed it too late into the fight and the timer ran out on the first time I did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So second time I did it, I knew what I had to do and I managed to defeat him. And I noticed you can kind of like do a loop round and like hit him again almost immediately.
Well, if he gets caught in the loop, he actually loses like a bunch of his scales or whatever.
Yeah.
So if you do it around his tail, it pretty much instant kills him.
I wasn't able to kind of like grab onto his tail. I only found myself able to grab onto his front part, his face.
Well, you don't grab hold of it. You've just got to do the loop like just before he passes with his tail so that once your loop's made, his tail passes through it and blows up basically. But yeah, he's a pain in the ass. It took me ages to figure out how to do him.
Yeah, I had no idea. And in the time I had set aside, I was like, okay, well, I'm not trying this again.
But, you know, Knights is, you know, quite an interesting game. Main problem with the demo is that it takes the worst level in the game. I think it definitely gets a lot more inventive after the first level, because when I played Knights originally, like for the first couple of levels, I didn't quite get it. And then things started clicking into place later on. And I was like, oh, okay, this is pretty fun.
It's a very unique game, but it's apparently the creator of Knights, I want to say I was reading that they originally, because I know it was the person who originally made Sonic, they were looking at possibly a Sonic game, and they're like, no, we want to do something different. And Knights was actually originally going to be a 2D game.
I mean, it is kind of 2D.
But it was just going to be a straight-up 2D thing, and the reason they wanted to do 2D is because they didn't think they could make a character that people could connect with in 3D at the time.
Yeah, I think I remember hearing that.
But basically, they gave it a go. They were able to make the levels more visually appealing while still keeping it effectively a side-scroller.
Yeah.
And yeah, and that's where it came from. And they designed, and it's funny because they designed the game in mind with like, hey, new players, you can play the game and new players can get their hands on it and enjoy it. But then there's a lot for experienced players to really get into. You get to the boss and you're like, this is not intuitive. Or easy.
No. But the thing is, it's the hardest boss in the game, in my opinion. The rest are pretty straightforward.
I test your worth.
Well, yeah. It's a strange start to the game, and I'd say it's a strange pick for the demo, but, you know, all in all, I think Christmas Nights actually offers quite a fair bit. It was free at the time, and, you know, even now it's pretty cheap to pick up.
Yeah, I mean, it was free, and it's included with the Xbox 360 version of Knights.
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, you're not really shelling out anything extra for it, and it's extra content.
For the people who don't want to shell out somewhere between $100 and $200 for Knights into Dreams.
Right.
It's in America.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's expensive. It's absurd.
It's like maybe about 20 quid or something in Europe. And, like, the Japanese version is, like, maybe half that.
Yeah. Knights into Dreams is an expensive game because all Saturn games are expensive over here.
Yeah, it's
basically, just get
ridiculous.
The Japanese version.
Yeah.
The Japanese version is dirt cheap, and it's, like, pretty much all in English.
There's not a whole lot going there. But if you don't have, or if you don't have a Saturn, you can't get anything, you can do on the XBLA, oh, yeah, NPSN, and I want to say it's, like, probably Steam as well. I want to say it's a $10 or $20 game. Probably 10. Probably $9.99.
Yeah, probably a tenner.
That sounds about right. I mean, I got it for free from XBLA, so...
Nice. I mean, this is a game that I would recommend people pick up, especially if they can get the XBLA edition, because it has a cleaned-up model where they just clean up the sprites and the environment, so it's a little bit easier on the eyes.
Yeah.
And it comes with a whole bunch of different extras that you can unlock by playing the game better and better, like the Christmas Nights mode.
Yeah.
Whatnot.
I mean, personally, I'd say that if you have a Saturn, then get Knights into Dreams, like the Japanese version or whatever. Don't pay ridiculous amounts for the American.
Yeah, and definitely I would say that this is kind of one of those, because this game isn't a tech demo, but it feels like a competent tech demo for the Saturn.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, and one of the things I was reading said that Christmas Nights was given away to increase Saturn sales. So they were intending to use it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, either way, I'd say it's definitely worth pick up.
Oh yeah, I'll probably look for a Japanese import once I get my 4-in-1 for my Saturn, so this will be in my collection. I feel that Knights is a good enough game to be basically a staple for a Saturn collection.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel it's definitely worth me going back through and actually playing the rest of the game.
Yeah. Works a bit better on the 360 pad, I imagine, because people say that with the 3D controller, it works a lot better than the 2D pad.
That would be why they coupled them together. That's how they were selling the 3D pads originally.
Yeah, I mean, it's perfectly playable with a 2D pad, but I've heard people just say that you get the 3D pad and you're suddenly racking up A ranks and stuff quite easily. So it does make a difference.
I feel like this game is deserving of a sequel. I know they got one on the Wii.
Well, there is one. It's just nobody talks about it.
Knight's Journey of Dreams was released on the Wii, and I guess it wasn't like a bad game, but it wasn't a good game either.
Yeah.
Is what I can gather.
People didn't like it.
But I feel this is one of those IPs they could revive.
I mean, really, they should at least do like a collection full of like obscure titles like Knights and Burning Rangers and stuff like that.
Panzer, if they weren't doing the remakes.
The remake, yeah.
I can't wait for that.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, but have you seen the other things that the developers made?
No, don't scare me, Adam.
Well, I've looked and it's pretty much all trash. Like, the reviews have been average at best for some of the games they've made, so I just hope they've got a lot of guidance from Sega.
Well, let's hope.
But we'll see. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a remake, so they've got, like, the source already there. I mean, they've got... It's only what it is to remake it. They've got, like, the basis, so...
Yeah, it's not like they have to come up with their own idea.
Well, exactly. Like, all the mechanics and everything are there. It's just making it into a game that seems kind of modern. But, yeah, anyway, Knights in Dreams is a good game.
It's just more Knights with a slightly different look.
I would say that the unlockables make it worthwhile, especially because it's quite a cheap purchase, because there's a lot of stuff to unlock and do. And I kind of think that's enough for a hardcore Knights fan. If you're not a hardcore Knights fan, I'd just say pick up Knights.
Christmas Knights was the Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes before Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes. That's what's going on there.
Yeah,
it's a really short game, but there's a lot going on if you look for it.
Apart from Christmas Nights didn't charge people.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah, you had to pay about 20 quid or something for Ground Zeroes.
I don't know, I paid about 6, so...
I got it for free eventually.
All right, nice one. We'll take a little break. We'll come back and not only discuss our pick for this episode, but also our picks for the year. So that'll be exciting. All right, we'll see you again after the jump. Okay, so that's the final episode of 2018 wrapped up, the Christmas specials. So, which one of those games did you like the best? Matt, what do you reckon?
My favourite game of the four was Days Before Christmas. It's quite a simple platformer, but I found a lot of charm in it, and it was a nice, fun, simple game.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough to say. What about you, Ryan?
I'm also going to go with Days Before Christmas. It's such a clean-looking game, and again, it's a solid platformer, but then also Uncle Krampus, or whoever the hell is Drunk Santa Claus,
was just
the most fantastic thing I had seen.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. What about you, Steve?
So I'm going to pick the same game, Days Before Christmas, but only because I can't pick my own. I liked Christmas Nights the best out of what we did, but I can't pick my own, so.
Yeah, and I would probably pick my own if I had to choose, but because I can't, I'd go Christmas Nights. Christmas Nights is really good. I think I like Days Before Christmas a little bit better because there's a bit more to it, because Christmas Nights is just a demo.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's still pretty good. So I'm going to go with Christmas Nights. Right, and because we've finished off a year, I think it would be interesting to pick not only our favourite for the episode, but our favourite game of the year. We've had, how many? 11?
This is episode 11.
It's episode 11, so we've done 11 episodes of games, four each, so that's a whole 44 games to choose from. Which one did you like the best? For me, it was Banjo-Kazooie, which was picked by Ryan. Banjo is a game that I have, you know, had a lot of familiarity with before, and I loved it, you know, back then, and I love it still now. And out of the ones that have been picked, I still think it's probably the cream of the crop. What about you guys?
My favourite this entire year was definitely Castlevania Symphony of the Night. I'd never really played a Castlevania game before. I had played like a few minutes here and there of some of the early ones, and they were okay. I like the aesthetic of it. I like the lore of it, the background of it, but I'd never really put any time into it. So I wasn't really expecting much out of Castlevania Symphony of the Night. And I jumped into it, started playing it, immediately fell in love with it, to the point where it's now in my top five favorite games of all time. It is just a fantastic exploration, Metroidvania, brilliant game.
That's pretty high praise. What about you two?
I'm actually going to say the exact same thing. The only difference is I had had this game talked up to me before. So going in, I knew it was going to be pretty good, but it's still like, it's definitely my favorite of what we've covered this year.
And Ryan?
And I'm also going to go with Symphony of the Night. I've always been a fan of the Metroidvania category, Super Metroid, Metroid Fusion, Metroid Zero Mission, Castlevania, Harmony of Dissonance. I'd played all of those and thoroughly loved them. They're all in like some of my favorite games, and I had never played Symphony of the Night, partly never had a PlayStation, and I've owned it on Xbox for a while. I think it was given away free quite a while back.
But you never played it.
But I had never sat down and actually really played it more than a couple of minutes, and I just wasn't in the mood. And when I sat down for this and got through that first little gauntlet area where you're made of paper, wet paper mache.
Yeah.
Once I got into it, I absolutely fell in love with it, even with the more irritating segments, and a couple of the bosses are a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
But it's just so good. The music is so good. Visually, it's amazing. The atmosphere is amazing. The slight RPG elements that are in there, it all feels so good. The way the game caters to so many varied styles of play, but subtly. It doesn't like throw like, oh, you have to be a magic caster. It's not like building a character in Diablo or something like that where you're stuck doing one thing. You pick up all these items and you figure out all these little secrets, and it caters to how you want to run through, and that's something that Metroid's never been able to do because that's not how the games are built.
Yeah.
And like, Matt, this is probably in my top 10 now of just favorite games of all time.
Wow. So it seems you pretty much love that game.
Also, it's really easy to pick up now as well. You no longer have to pay £300 for the original. It's on PSN. It's on Xbox Live. It's been re-released as Castlevania Requiem along with Rondo of Blood.
So Castlevania Dracula X Chronicles on PSP as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A bunch of re-releases.
So you can pick it up like anywhere.
Which is great, really, because it's a game that everyone should play. Back before they released it on XBLA, you could only get like the PlayStation and the Saturn versions, which were kind of prohibitively expensive. It's kind of opened up to a lot of people, which is great because, you know, it's a classic, but it's a classic for a good reason.
Yeah, this is a game that everybody should give a shot.
Yeah, definitely.
And if you found the originals too hard, don't worry, because this is easier than the originals. It's still a challenging game, but it's not that kind of hardcore difficulty that some of the earlier ones were.
And it starts challenging, but then it gets easier. Because I find that, you know, once all your upgrades get taken away, it becomes really hard for the initial part. And then, like, probably up until you reach, like, the library area, I'd say, is when you start getting strong enough to actually feel like you can handle things, and then you just get stronger and stronger up until a point when you're kind of overpowered.
Well, and I don't know if we talked about this in the episode. I'm sure we probably did, but this was when Castlevania changed to have that kind of format.
So this was their first attempt as well.
Yeah, this is when they got away from the design of the old ones where you're just barreling through.
Yeah, but I like the old ones too, to be honest. I mean, especially like, you know, going back to what Matt said about it being re-released for Castlevania Requiem. I think Rondo of Blood is maybe my favourite of the 2D ones. And then you've got the Symphony of the Night, which is the Metroidvania style. And that's probably my favourite of the Metroidvania. So you've got like two of the best from each of the different Castlevania genres in,
right,
in one package.
I will say, I like what I've seen of Rondo of Blood. I am very fond of the design of the first one just because it was so well thought out. But that's, you know, that's a personal thing.
Yeah. All right. So now we've covered the best. What about the worst? I'll leave my pick to last because I have a feeling that you're all going to pick the same game. Again, stay away from games that you've picked.
So my worst game of this year is another one of Adam's picks. Adam is in my good books for Symphony of the Night. But have you ever played a game that made you want to set yourself on fire? Because that is what Super Monkey Ball Adventure is like. It is...
That's not bad.
It is annoying. It is frustrating. It is hard to control. The music, the voices, everything about that game was just such a terrible experience for me. And I still have... If anyone wants a mint copy for PS2, I still have one.
Oh, I'm disappointed. I like that game. I mean, I don't love it. It's, you know, it's shit. But
we could do an April Fool's giveaway. You get rid of it that way.
Yeah, maybe we'll do
But then we gotta go, then we gotta find a way to get rid of two of them. I don't think we're gonna find two suckers.
Mine's going on the shelf of shame.
Oh, you disappoint me, Matt. Right, what about you guys?
Again, I'm gonna be saying Super Monkey Ball Adventure. It's not that it's just a garbage game from start, because I can pick genuinely garbage games, but my relationship is like with a father with their son who has done something like gone and crashed the car or something like that. I'm not mad. I'm disappointed in the game.
Yeah.
It does everything just not good enough. If they had spent a little bit longer fine-tuning the game, I think it would have been better because the game has this weird underlying charm that's just buried under inadequacy.
You know what? I think I kind of completely agree with you there. I mean, everything it does, it just doesn't do well enough. I think that the overall idea had some potential. You know, bearing in mind it was like the third GameCube game of Monkey Ball, they tried to do something different. And I think theoretically it could have worked. So I think the idea was solid enough. They just, you know, I don't know, they weren't competent enough maybe.
Yeah, and the more you play the game and you have to deal with its all, like all the shortcomings and going like, oh my God, this wouldn't be so bad if X, and this wouldn't be so bad if X, and it just over and over and over, you just get more and more frustrated with the game.
Yeah, that's fair.
Until you're ready to pull your teeth out.
All right, so what about you, Stephen? The same game or something different?
I was all set to pick TMNT because it's just broken, but I almost feel like that's not fair. I'm actually going to change my answer to Super Monkey Ball for those reasons. Because, now that you mention it, that is kind of the experience. Like, it's a game that I'm kind of interested in the idea of, but there's no way I'm going to get through that game to see any of it.
Well, that's disappointing that you all picked the same. At least you all picked Symphony of the Night as well.
Now, TMNT had kick-ass music in it, though.
Yeah, I think that's like the one saving grace of it.
It's the only saving grace. It's all it has.
Well, leading on from that, I will probably admit that, you know, the music was the one saving grace because TMNT for me was utter garbage. As much as I wanted to pick Home Alone for my worst pick, I think that, you know, the idea at least has a solid premise. But with TMNT, it's like they didn't even try. It's just they took the turtles, they put some general kind of themes together that seemed a bit turtlish. And then they just threw all kinds of shitty enemies that didn't even make sense. They made them in a obnoxious gameplay sections, like the underwater bit, you know, and shit like that. Or bits where you can't even really get anywhere. And there's bosses that you have to cheese because there's no legitimate way of doing it without dying. It's just an exercise in frustration.
I will never sit down and actually defend the game.
Yeah. I mean, as much as I liked your pick of Banjo-Kazooie, I have to say that the worst is also going to be yours, Ryan. TMNT.
That's fair.
Right. For the final category for the end of year, I thought it'd be interesting to choose the most surprising game. Now, it could be surprising because you expect it to be good and it turned out to be shit, or more likely it's the other way around, where you weren't expecting much and it turned out to be pretty good. So again, we'll start with you guys. Ryan, do you want to share what you thought was most surprising to you?
Yeah, I was originally going to go with, had I been able to play Dark Savior, I would have said that. And I'm not going to pick it just because I didn't actually get to play it proper.
Yeah.
Although I will say it was the most surprising in just, I guess, uniqueness. But the most surprising game for me was Wizen Liz. And it's not even surprising because it was so good, although it was a blast to play. But because it was so fucking weird. And yet was still a blast to play. There's so many games you can play that you have no clue what's going on. And you can get kind of turned off from them, but the game is an absolute charm.
You know what? That's a really good answer.
And I just loved it, and I'm sad that it's really expensive.
Yeah, I kind of didn't expect much from Wizen Liz, and, you know, I got more out of it than I expected. But for me, I think that it was a game from the portable exclusives. And again, it has to be one of your picks, Ryan. It was James Bond 007 for me. I fully expected this, you know, Game Boy James Bond game to be utter garbage.
Surprise!
And what I didn't expect was a game that was like a Legend of Zelda game, but with James Bond. I didn't expect that at all. Not only is it, you know, really good, I would probably say it's my third favorite James Bond game.
Wow. Yeah. It's an honor.
So that really surprised me. It's got its flaws. I mean, there's like that one level where you've got to find the secret hideout, which is just a maze of nonsense.
I got that game. My mom came back from out of town because growing up in Bush, Alaska, we didn't have game stores and stuff like that. And she had gone out to Anchorage and she came back and she had just stopped in some store. And this is probably late 90s. So like 99, 2000, right around that time. And she had just picked up a bunch of used games, and that was one of them.
Just like, here's a bunch of shitty games. Yeah, enjoy one of them.
Well, I mean, we got a bunch of good games too, like Super Mario Land 2,
yeah,
the 6 golden coins, and
but it was just
James Bond in there. It was just a random. There was also Star Wars on the Game Boy, and that game is, I'll never ever put that on the list. I'll never suggest that we play that. It's awful. It is so hard.
Is that similar to...
Yes.
I'll have to check it out, because it was a Master System Star Wars.
I don't know
if it's the same.
It's similar to the Super Nintendo game, but worse.
Right, yeah. So it could be the same then, because that was the game that was just obnoxiously hard.
But yeah, that's where I got James Bond, and Metroid 2 was in that.
Nice.
So yeah, some good games and some bad games, and I was surprised. I'd probably beaten 007 3-4 times.
All right, well, what about you, Steve?
My most surprising, it's tough for me because it's got to be from the survival horror episode because I did not know I was going to like that genre at all. It's either Parasite Eve or Resident Evil, and I think I need to lean towards Resident Evil since it wasn't my pick. But yeah, like I knew people liked Resident Evil, I just didn't know that I was going to like it just because like I didn't think survival horror was going to be my thing.
Yeah.
And it was a really, really good game. Like, you know, I and that's why I was debating because I knew people liked it, so I knew it was quality in some way.
Yeah, it is a pretty quality game. I mean, the original one is pretty solid, if a little dated. But the GameCube remake, they really really stepped up their game to make something special with that remake. It could have been really lazy and just been like a, you know, like a HD do-over, but they put a lot of effort in and it's really good.
Yeah, and then especially being able to play it with the modern setup just made it even better for me.
Yeah, in the Resident Evil remake.
Yeah.
See, I went into Resident Evil knowing I wasn't going to like it, and I was right.
Well, that's fair. I mean, like, the genre isn't for everyone. It's something that I think is very specialist. There's a lot of people that like it and really, really like it. But then other people, you know, will play it and just find it to be frustrating. And I understand that. And I think it's just something about the genre. I suppose like RPGs, you know, the people that like them love them. The people that don't like me hate them.
I've always been a big fan of anything horror, really. So that's probably what drew me to survival horror. And there are some duds, but I do tend to enjoy most of them.
Okay, so that leaves you, Matt. What was your most surprising?
My most surprising was another one of Adam's picks.
Oh.
And it was Perfect Dark for the N64. I had played a lot of multiplayer GoldenEye. I'd played like 5 minutes of the single player and wasn't really into it. And I knew Perfect Dark was from the same team. So I figured this is just going to be like GoldenEye single player. And it turned out to be a hell of a lot of fun. Having gone back and played GoldenEye single player, Perfect Dark just improves on so many of the mechanics in that game. Plus, it has a really stupidly weird story with aliens and shape-shifting monsters and everything. And it's just a lot of fun to play, and there's a lot of freedom in how you can play it as well. So it was something that I wasn't expecting to like. Mm-hmm. And I ended up completing it, and I really enjoyed it.
And another thing it doesn't have that's a point in its favor is it doesn't have a club.
Well, actually, it does. You can unlock all the classic GoldenEye weapons in the game.
Oh, can you?
Yes. Basically, if you go to the firing range, if you get golds in, like, all the guns, you unlock all the GoldenEye guns.
Oh, well, then never mind. It does have a club.
Yeah.
Does that include the golden gun as well?
I think so. I think it includes every... Yeah, I'm pretty sure it includes every GoldenEye gun. Like, what you do is, when you start unlocking golds, you'll unlock some of them. And then as you unlock more golds, you'll unlock more of them. And then once you unlock all the golds, you get all of them. But it's worth doing as well, because they've got the reload animations from GoldenEye, so they just go, like, up and down. But yeah, it's really cool. And another thing I'd mention as well is not only, you know, doing stuff like that, but I would recommend trying to play on the other difficulties as well if you can. Because if you do that, you get bonus levels. And the bonus levels are really cool. Like, there's Mr. Blonde's Revenge for beating Agent. But, like, the one for being Secret Agent, you get to play as Elvis. And you get another special one for completing the training, I think. And you get another one for being Hard Mode, obviously.
We should point out as well, this is the alien Elvis, not actually Elvis Presley.
Yeah, definitely. That would be really weird if they did that. As I say, it's my favourite game of all time, so... the fact that you enjoyed it, I'm really happy about.
Yeah, and I would actually agree with that. Perfect Dark was high on my list for most surprising, because I knew nothing going in, and it turned out to actually be really good.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad you all liked it. So I think that pretty much wraps it up for this episode. And that wraps up for 2018 as well. So I guess I'll see you all next year.
Yep.
Yes, you will.
Right, well, to everybody listening, have a Merry Christmas or whatever you celebrate, and have a good time with friends and family, and we'll see you in January.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Happy holidays.